Section 3. Common misconceptions related to worship and worship rituals. The first of these misconceptions is, making vows of worship is recommended. Many people are of the opinion that Islam encourages a person to make a vow to offer some worship ritual if his wish is granted. Thus, a person pledges before God that he would, for example, keep a certain number of fasts or pray a certain amount of optional prayers if a certain desire of his is fulfilled. It needs to be appreciated that making vows of worship for the fulfillment of certain wishes was never the way of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam or of his companions radiyallahu anhum. It means that a person is imposing a condition to carry out certain virtuous deeds and also burdening himself with something which may ultimately be very difficult to fulfill. Worship done in this manner may also adversely affect a person's relationship with his Creator. It becomes more of a mechanical act, often done in disregard to the spirit of worship. Worship should be done from the willingness of the heart and from the eagerness of the soul. Otherwise, it will fail to reap the real benefit it carries, and that is purification of the inner self. In fact, worship done if one's wish is not granted may at times be more beneficial in achieving this end. The correct way in this regard is to pray to the Almighty that a certain wish be granted. If the wish is granted, a person should express his gratitude by letting his feelings take their own course and manifest themselves in whatever form of worship at that particular time. Also, the quantity of worship does not matter in such cases. It is the quality that really counts. We now come to the second common misconception, and that is, praying after the Asr prayer is forbidden. It is generally believed that Muslims have been forbidden to pray or prostrate after the Asr prayer until Maghrib. It needs to be appreciated that according to the established Sunnah of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, the only forbidden times for prayer are sunrise and sunset. This precautionary measure is meant to curb polytheism, since many nations of antiquity worship the sun at these times. At all other times, prayers can be offered. Consequently, one can pray between Asr and Maghrib. It seems that the following hadith has led to the belief that no prayer can be offered between Asr and Maghrib. Abu Sayyid al-Khudri says that he heard the Prophet say, "There is no prayer after dawn until the sun rises, and there is no prayer after Asr until the sun sets." Al-Bukhari, Al-Jami' al-Sahih, Volume 1, page 212, Hadith number 561. Now, if all the texts of this hadith are collected, it comes to light that a part of it has been left out in most of its texts. This can be observed from the following two ahadiths. Ali reported from the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, "Do not pray after Asr except if the sun is high in the sky." Ahmad ibn Hanbal, Musnad, Volume 1, page 130, Hadith number 1076. The other narrative is, Ali reported that the Prophet said, "Do not pray after Asr prayer except if the sun is shining brightly high in the sky." Al-Bayhaqi, As-Sunan al-Kubra, Volume 2, page 459, Hadith number 4196. In other words, what the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam actually forbade was praying very near the time of sunset, since this might accidentally lead a person to pray in the forbidden period of sunset. Consequently, it is clear from these ahadiths that if one intends to pray after Asr, one should make sure that one does so before sunset. A person has not been stopped from praying after Asr, as has been inferred by some. We now come to the third common misconception, and that is, the Almighty asked for Ishmael's sacrifice. The clarification of this misconception is based on the research of Hamiduddin Farahi, a famous scholar of the subcontinent who died in 1930. It is generally believed that God asked Abraham sallallahu alaihi wasallam to sacrifice his son. True, the sacrifice never took place, but the question is, why was it asked for? It needs to be understood that the Almighty never commanded Abraham sallallahu alaihi wasallam to sacrifice his son. It was Abraham who took this step thinking that the Almighty wanted this to happen. In this regard, the following points must remain in consideration. 1. Abraham thought that he was directed to sacrifice his son by the Almighty in a dream shown to him. For the prophets of God, such dreams are a source of contact with the Almighty, and in them they are shown certain images by him for the purpose of their education and instruction. However, as a principle, they are not to be interpreted literally. They contain realities which are depicted in symbolic form. Symbolic representation is a very subtle and powerful way of expression. Facts seem unveiled, yet for one who pauses to ponder, they are most evident. They portray a fact in figurative form in order to make it more effective to understand. As an example, consider a dream of the Prophet Joseph mentioned in the Quran. It says that he saw the sun, the moon, and the 11 stars bowing down to him. The interpretation of the dream offered by the Quran itself at the end of Surah Yusuf shows that this bowing down was a symbolism to show that his 11 brothers and father and mother would submit to his authority as the king. Similarly, more examples can be given from the Quran. 2. The next point which arises is about the symbolism found in human sacrifice. In other words, what does human sacrifice stand for? A knowledge of the ancient scriptures reveals that human sacrifice offered to God symbolizes consecrating and dedicating a person to service of God. Thus, for example, the progeny of Aaron, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, was assigned to serve the temple, and whenever they were required to discharge this responsibility, they underwent all the rites meant for sacrificial animals. It is stated in the Old Testament, "You are to bring the Levites before the Lord, and the Israelites are to lay their hands on them. Aaron is to present the Levites before the Lord like a wave offering from the Israelites, so that they may be ready to do the work of the Lord. After the Levites lay their hands on the heads of the bulls, use the one for a sin offering to the Lord, and the other for a burnt offering, to make atonement for the Levites. Make the Levites stand before Aaron and his sons, and then present them as a wave offering to the Lord. In this way, you are to set apart the Levites from among the children of Israel, and the Levites shall be mine. After you have purified the Levites and presented them as a wave offering, they are to come to do their work at the tent of meeting." Numbers, chapter number 8, verses 10 to 15. Similarly, whenever someone was consecrated and dedicated to God, he had to be the firstborn. It is recorded in the Bible, "They are the Israelites who are to be given wholly to me. I have taken them as my own in place of the firstborn, the first male offspring from every Israelite woman. Every firstborn male in Israel, whether man or animal, is mine. When I struck down all the firstborn in Egypt, I set them apart for myself. And I have taken the Levites in place of all the firstborn sons in Israel." Numbers, chapter number 8, verses 16 to 18. In other words, the Almighty actually wanted Abraham, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, to devote Ishmael, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, for special tasks assigned by the Almighty. 3. Abraham, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, in a spirit of submission to the will of God, started to follow his dream in the literal sense instead of interpreting the dream. Consequently, the Almighty told him that he had made the dream a reality, which of course was not required. However, this willingness to submit to a command of God as perceived by Abraham sallallahu alaihi wasallam greatly pleased the Almighty, since it was based on sincerity and a great readiness to do what he thought was God's directive. We now come to the fourth misconception, and that is, charity can be given instead of animal sacrifice. Some people think that instead of sacrificing sheep on Eid, one can donate an equivalent amount in money to charities. This notion is not true and requires a little elaboration. For every human being who believes in God, there are two distinct spheres of interaction in which relationships come into existence. The first sphere covers a person's relationship with God, while the second one constitutes a person's relationship with his fellow human beings. Islam and all divinely revealed religions nothing but guide human intellect in these two spheres. A person's relationship with God manifests itself in worship, which in Islam has some distinct forms. Similarly, a person's relationship with his brethren takes the form of social interaction, which again has many areas. Total or partial negation of any one of these spheres results in an unbalanced life. Extremism in the first sphere breeds monasticism and asceticism, while extremism in the second one breeds materialism. Islam wants every person to create a balance in his life by giving each sphere its due. Similarly, it wants a person to undertake the various prescribed forms of interaction in both spheres, since each has a definite purpose. In the first sphere, Islam has prescribed specific forms of worship, of which one form cannot replace the other, since each has its own purpose and objective. Animal sacrifice is one such form of worship. It has an underlying philosophy which must well be appreciated in order to offer it in letter and spirit. Just as Salah cannot replace Zakah and vice versa, animal sacrifice also cannot be replaced by Zakah or charity. What animal sacrifice induces in a person, Zakah or Salah or Hajj do not. The basic reason for animal sacrifice on Eid is to commemorate a great event which depicts an extraordinary expression of submission to the command of God, which is the essence of Islam. The Prophet Abraham, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, while obeying the Almighty, set a platinum example of this submission. When we offer an animal in sacrifice, we actually symbolize our intention that we are ready to lay down our lives for the cause of God whenever required by Him, just as the great Prophet Abraham had once done so with spirit and splendor, glory and grandeur. We now come to the fifth misconception, and that is, Zakah cannot be given to non-Muslims. Some people are of the view that Zakah cannot be given to non-Muslims. This view is not correct. The following Quranic verse spells out the heads under which zakah can be expended. إِنَّمَا الصَّدَقَاتُ لِلْفُقَرَاءِ وَالْمَسَاكِينَ وَالْعَامِلِينَ عَلَيْهَا وَالْمُؤَلَّفَةِ قُلُوبُهُمْ وَفِي الرِّقَابِ وَالْغَارِمِينَ وَفِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ وَابْنِ السَّبِيلِ فَرِيضَةً مِّنَ اللَّهِ وَاللَّهُ عَلِيمٌ حَكِيمٌ. Zakah is only for the poor and the needy, and for those who are amils over it, and for those whose hearts are to be reconciled to the truth, and for the emancipation of the slaves, and for those who have been inflicted with losses, and for the way of God, and for the wayfarers. Surah number 9, verse 60. It is evident from the verse quoted above that the Quran does not discriminate between the recipients of zakat on the basis of their beliefs or religion. In other words, zakat money can be given to any needy person, whatever his religion is.